From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has emerged from Sunday's election with sweeping new executive powers and a coalition parliamentary majority. The opposition has conceded defeat. The presidential hopeful Muharrem İnce called the outcome unjust, warned the new presidential system is dangerous and could lead to one-man rule. International observers were critical of the election process, citing unbalanced media coverage. But Ambassador Audrey Glover of the Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights said she doubts it will have any impact on the result.
But it's probably rather unlikely that these few irregularities will make much difference to the final, if any difference at all, to the final result.
Qatar Haas University Professor Serhat Güvenç said the election changed decades of parliamentary democracy. The outcome is uncertain.
It's a new phase. We don't know as yet. Of course, the constitution was changed and the changes were approved in the referendum last year. But we don't know how the new system will operate. But parliament, compared to the previous system, has to settle for much reduced powers, especially in checking the executive.
The U.S. Monday said it respects the decision of Turkish voters, but encouraged Turkey's elected leaders to strengthen the country's democracy. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation is sending a team to Ethiopia to help authorities there investigate a grenade attack Saturday during a large rally that left two dead and dozens wounded. The blast occurred in the capital Addis Ababa as Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed entered a speech. 30 people have been arrested, including several police officials. There has been no claim of responsibility. This is VOA News. U.S. motorcycle maker Harley-Davidson announced Monday it's moving some operations overseas to avoid European retaliatory tariffs after the U.S. imposed steel and aluminum duties. President Donald Trump counseled patience in a tweet, saying he fought hard for the company, insisting the EU has hurt the U.S. badly on trade. Sean Cruz is an Ameritrade strategy manager.
For Harley to do this, this is a little bit more of a long-term capital deployment they're doing in this investment, which means they maybe don't see this as much of a transitory issue that's going to be worked out. They might actually think there are going to be some long-run implications for their business, and they're making putting their money where their mouth is and putting an investment in something overseas down in Australia.
Gary Huffbauer, non-resident senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics, said multinationals like Harley are at a disadvantage, facing both retaliatory tariffs and paying more for steel and aluminum.
And many companies are facing exactly the same thing. They probably won't announce what they're doing, but this is one absolutely predictable result of this trade policy that President Trump is following.
Meanwhile, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said anticipated investment restrictions are not targeting China alone, but will apply to all countries trying to steal U.S. technology. Pro-government Syrian forces continue pressing an assault into southwest Syria, closing in on Jordan and Israel's borders. The area has been covered by a de-escalation agreement. The U.S. has warned of serious consequences, but Washington Institute for Near East Policy Distinguished Fellow James Jeffrey said U.S. action has been far short of that.
We issued fire and brimstone statements out of the Department of State, stating twice in the last week, warning the Syrians not to do exactly what they've done, stating specifically that they would be, quote, serious consequences. The only serious consequence I have seen is a tweet.
Meanwhile, two Israeli missiles struck near Damascus International Airport early Tuesday, with one report indicating a Hezbollah arms depot was struck. The pro-government coalition battling Houthi rebels for control of the Yemeni port city Hodeidah said it killed 8 members of the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah in an airstrike in the country's north. It said they were among dozens of terrorists killed in Moran in Sana'a province, a Houthi stronghold. British lawmakers Monday voted in favor of building a new runway at London's Heathrow Airport, one of the world's busiest.
The ayes to the right, 415. The noes to the left, 190.
London's Mayor Sadiq Khan and Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson opposed the expansion. Construction could begin in 2021, the price tag nearly $19 billion. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Tuesday, June the 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Congolese opposition leader Moise Katumbi says that he is in favor of a coalition that could include other opposition figures, including Jean-Pierre Bemba, who is expected back in the country soon after his war crimes convictions were overturned on appeal by the International Criminal Court. In Mali, local government administrators, the ones working to organize next month's presidential election, launched a seven-day strike demanding more security and allowances. And in Khartoum, South Sudan's President Salva Kiir promised to stop the suffering of his people. He made the remarks at the start of another round of face-to-face talks with rebel leader Riek Machar in Sudan's capital, Khartoum. In Kenya today, President Uhuru Kenyatta will host his counterparts from Uganda and Rwanda. The three East African regional heads of state will discuss developmental initiatives, including shared infrastructure projects.
The Northern Corridor Integration Project is a multilateral development initiative established in 2013, that is 5 years ago, and its aim is at speeding up the development in East African region, particularly the improvement of infrastructure for the case of movement of people, goods and services in the region.
Maureen Ojambo is a reporter in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. She'll be covering the summit. And Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa is today expected to sign a peace pledge with other political parties, committing to ensure that the July 30 polls go peacefully. Meanwhile, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has expressed confidence that the upcoming July elections will be free, fair, transparent, and credible.
Our very first voters' roll that we availed to ordinary members of the public, so we're quite excited about that, and that we feel that as an electoral management body, that's actually quite a big achievement.
That's Justice Priscilla Chigumba, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission. Those stories plus a World Cup update are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. South Sudan President Salva Kiir promised to stop the suffering of the South Sudanese people in remarks made at the start of another round of face-to-face talks with rebel leader Riek Machar, this time in Khartoum. Kiir met Machar last week in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, but no agreements came out of the meeting. President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda, who is in Khartoum to help mediate the talks, reiterated his commitment to work with the leaders in the region to stop the conflict. And in Mali, local government administrators, the ones that will be organizing next month's presidential election, launched a seven-day strike. They are demanding more security and allowances. The administrators who hold the rank of préfets or sub-préfets are the government's representatives at the local level. They say the strike will last until at least July 1st. This was after the talks with the government collapsed over the weekend. And Congolese opposition leader Moise Katumbi says that he is in favor of a coalition that could include other opposition figures, including Jean-Pierre Bemba. Bemba was recently released by the International Criminal Court after his war crimes convictions were overturned on appeal. Mr. Katumbi, Jean-Pierre Bemba, and Felix Tshisekedi, leader of the DRC's largest opposition party, are the main likely opposition contenders in a December presidential vote to choose a successor to President Joseph Kabila. In Kenya today, President Uhuru Kenyatta will host his counterparts from Uganda and Rwanda. The three East African regional heads of state will discuss development initiatives, including shared infrastructural projects. Maureen Ojambo is in Nairobi, Kenya. I reached her early this morning to tell us what this meeting is about and some of the issues that will be on the table.
The Northern Corridor Integration Project is a multilateral development initiative established in 2013 that is 5 years ago, and its aim is at speeding up the development in East African region, particularly the improvement of infrastructure for the case of movement of people, goods and services in the region.
Okay. You say that this was started in 2013. How often does this summit take place, and does it often happen in Kenya?
Not particularly in Kenya. The last one happened in Uganda, that's Kampala, on 23rd of April in 2016, where the leaders are expected to review the progress made and implement all the various resolutions reached at on that day. That was the 13th summit held in Kampala.
Okay. And what are some of the milestones, I guess, some of the big projects that were in the pipeline in 2016 that will be discussed today in this summit?
Among the key projects that are there to be featured in the summit, during the summit meeting that will take place on Tuesday, is the standard gauge railway, where the significant progress has been made already in Kenya, that Kenya has successfully completed its line, that's from Mombasa to Nairobi and embarked on the Nairobi-Naivasha one section, which is already at 50%. The Ugandan one is already complete, and the Rwandan one is at around 80%. The heads of state will also be briefed about the progress being made with the ICT, and will be keen on the status of the one network area. That's for the one voice, which will fully be operational in all partner states, while the data for the one network area for data in operation in Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda, and South Sudan.
So I noticed that Burundi, which holds the chairmanship of the East African Community, is not mentioned as one of the countries that will be sending a representative for this summit. Is there a reason why?
No reason has been given by the State House from Kenya, but so far we only have Rwanda, that is Rwanda, Uganda, Kenya and South Sudan, who will be meeting. But Sudan, the President Salva Kiir will not be in, and therefore he'll be sending a diplomat to represent him.
What other areas are they going to look at that they feel have made progress so far since the last time they met in 2016?
The head of state will also look on progresses made on immigration department, tourism, trade, labor and services, single custom territory, mutual defense, cooperation, mutual peace and security cooperation, as an airspace management. As you can, if you have read in the recent past, there is a security threat among the Kenyan borders and the East African countries specifically, especially at the borders.
Is there expectation that they will be talking about power transmission lines between the three countries?
Yes, there is. There is power transmission line between the three countries that is also expected to be featured in their deliberation today. The oil refinery is also expected that final investment decision will be arrived at by next year, May, that is 2019.
Have there been any areas of contention or fallout since the last time they met? And what are some of those areas?
Mostly the areas that they didn't agree was on oil refinery. And oil refinery, that is. And it is expected that there will be a final investment decision that will be made by May 2019. So today, they'll just deliberate on such, and then next year, May, they'll make a decision if the land for the refinery has already been acquired. And Kenya has been requested to indicate the entity that will hold its 2.5% shareholding in the refinery sector.
Okay. Now, I noticed also one of the most prominent absences will be President Magufuli of Tanzania, one of the biggest economies in that region. Is there a reason why he's not attending?
No reason has been given by Magufuli, or rather the Kenyan State House office, as per the report by the spokesperson Manoa Esipisu. Nothing at all. Today or a representative.
Has there been any disagreements in the past with Tanzania, between Tanzania and these other countries?
The disagreements sometimes occurred, but in the recent past we've had Magufuli having some firm stance that some things will not happen in Kenya. You can remember some few months ago, Magufuli just destroyed Kenyan goods that were at the border, and this brought in some more of, though President Kenyatta did not react that much, but some of the leaders from Kenya were really annoyed about it, and it was all over social media. What Magufuli has done to the neighbor is not good, but we're not so sure if that can be the main reason as to why he's not attending.
Maureen Ojambo, thank you very much for speaking to us. That's Maureen Ojambo, is a reporter in Nairobi, Kenya. Thank you, Maureen.
Oh, you're welcome, Jackson.
In Zimbabwe, President Emmerson Mnangagwa is this Tuesday expected to sign a peace pledge with other political parties. The pledge is committing to ensure that the July 30 polls go peacefully. This is the first political event Mnangagwa is holding after a blast went off at a rally he was addressing in Bulawayo over the weekend. I reached reporter Sebastian Mofu in Harare for an update on the situation and what this peace pledge is all about.
No arrests have been made so far. Two people have succumbed to the injuries that they sustained, while about 50 are still being treated for the injuries that they sustained over the weekend.
And Sebastian, so today President Mnangagwa is expected to sign a peace pledge. What can you tell us about this peace pledge?
Yes, this is a pledge that all parties that are contesting in the July 30th presidential election and other elections, the parties are signing to pledge that they will conduct the campaigns peacefully to avoid the violence which has been associated with previous Zimbabwean elections.
And who is expected to attend this signing ceremony? Is this some sort of ceremony that is going to happen, and who's going to attend it?
Yes, there is a ceremony that is going to take place here in Harare. Besides the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, all other 22 presidential candidates are also expected to sign it, as well as the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission, which is supposed to be presiding over the ceremony and monitor that all the parties stick to their pledge.
Now, is this as a consequence or as a result of the incident or the events that happened on Saturday?
No, the Peace Commission says this has always been in the lineup in light of the violence that Zimbabwe's elections, the previous Zimbabwe elections were associated with.
That was Sebastian Mofu in Harare. I reached him earlier this morning. And still in Zimbabwe, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has expressed confidence that the upcoming July elections will be free, fair, transparent and credible. Justice Priscilla Chigumba says that she has been engaging political party representatives and other stakeholders to address their concerns before the elections. The chairperson's remarks came days after President Emmerson Mnangagwa narrowly escaped injury in an explosion at a campaign rally Saturday. The president and top leaders of the ruling ZANU-PF party were campaigning in the run-up to the polls. The president said there had been many attempts on his life, that he is used to them. Local media called the attack an assassination attempt. So far, 49 people were injured in the blast, including one of the vice presidents. The polls are expected to proceed as originally scheduled, despite the explosion over the weekend. Electoral Commission Chairperson Justice Priscilla Chigumba tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the printing of the ballot papers to be used for the elections would begin this week.
Well, our preparations are on course. I'm happy to report that we have now availed the final voters' roll to Zimbabweans after a bit of a struggle. It was our very first voters' roll that we availed to ordinary members of the public, so we're quite excited about that, and we feel that as an electoral management body, that's actually quite a big achievement. We have actually finished the procurement of ballot paper. This weekend we were busy with ballot paper design, and we're due to start printing shortly. However, I must point out that due to the large number of presidential candidates, we're having to obviously procure some more ballot paper, which process we've actually started today. But otherwise, we're generally happy as of now. After the sitting of the nomination court, we are actually now doing intensive training of polling agents and polling officers.
Madam Chairperson, what should the people of Zimbabwe expect from the commission in July's elections?
The people of Zimbabwe should expect a professional, independent commission that runs a smooth and well-oiled administrative electoral machine on that day. We are working flat out in terms of our procurements and administrative procedures to make sure that everything goes smoothly. And we are working, and we're quite happy. We've taken note. Yes, there have been certain incidences, but we've taken note that this is one. We had one of the most peaceful pre-election periods in recent elections. It's unfortunate events took a different turn last week, but all of the pre-election period had been relatively peaceful, and we were quite grateful for that. And we're actually hoping that once we get over this act of terrorism, we can actually continue in a peaceful manner. Zimbabweans are generally a peace-loving people.
If I may ask you, how credible, transparent will this July elections be?
I am very confident, I will use the word very confident as the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, that these elections will be fair, that they will be transparent, that they will be credible. I'm fairly certain that they will give us a credible result which will be acceptable to most right-thinking Zimbabweans.
Last but not the least, your message to the people of Zimbabwe ahead of the elections.
My message to the people of Zimbabwe ahead of the elections is this. Zimbabwe is a beautiful country, and we can only have the election that we want. We can only have the election that we deserve. Let us preach the message of peace. Let us preach the message of love. A democracy does not necessarily mean that we hate each other. We are Zimbabweans. This is our country. Let us go to choose the leaders that we want in peace and take our country forward and bring it forward. We owe it to future generations.
Justice Priscilla Chigumba, Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission chairperson. She was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty. In Burundi, the government says that more than 300 Burundians were deported from neighboring Rwanda since last Saturday. This comes as Rwanda and Burundi relations continue to deteriorate since 2015, when the incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in office. From Bujumbura, Moses Havyarimana has the story.
The relation between Burundi and Rwanda continued to deteriorate since 2015, when Burundi accused Rwanda of hosting the May 2015 coup plotters. Rwanda in return accused Bujumbura of sheltering the FDLR rebels, who are accused of committing the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Despite political tension between the two countries, the border communities weren't much affected until 2016, when two Burundians were allegedly shot dead by Rwandan army while smuggling food from Burundi. Manario is a 63-year-old man who was among the Burundians deported from neighboring Rwanda. He says that they had planted a lot of beans and left without harvesting, and that most of them were not allowed to take their belongings. All they were told is to leave the country immediately and that their stay was illegal. Burundi and Rwanda border communities only use identity cards to cross the borders to work in farms, visit families as part of the East African Community Initiative to promote the regional integration. However, since the political crisis in Burundi erupted, border communities say it is almost impossible to cross over as they used to do. Currently, there's not any official handover of the Burundians deported from Rwanda. They said that they are dropped off at the borders, and some have to cross the river Rusizi to make it to Burundi. Ale Mutabazi is the governor of Kirundo province that shares border with the neighboring Rwanda. He says that most of them got married to Rwandese, and when they were deported, they couldn't come with their families, especially children. He says that since Saturday, more than 300 Burundians were deported, and most of them were being hosted by their relatives in Burundi. The deportation of Burundians from Rwanda comes a few days after an armed gang shot five people and killed two of them in a rural village in southern Rwanda. According to the Rwandan police, the armed men came from Nyungwe Forest, which borders with Burundi. However, Rwanda's East African Community Minister, Olivier Nduhungire, said that he wasn't aware on the deportation of the Burundians from Rwanda, but didn't deny the deportation as it is being carried out.
They don't have any information about that, but they don't have any information I didn't follow quite well, so it's a difficult for me to say something about that.
Since 2015, Rwandans have felt insecure to live in Burundi as majority left after the two countries' relation continued to sour. Despite Burundi and Rwanda being member states of the East African Community and COMESA, with the protocols that liberalizes free movement of people and goods, traders and citizens of the both countries say that the transborder trade declined significantly from the last 3 years. Moses Savyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
For sports news, Samson O'Malley has some World Cup updates. Good morning, Samson.
Good morning to you, Jackson, and welcome to the latest update from the 2018 FIFA World Cup here in Russia as the competition gets into the final round of matches for the group stage. After spending 2 days in St. Petersburg, it appears the match between the Super Eagles of Nigeria and the Alba Celeste of Argentina is the much talked about fixture in this tournament.
But of course, you know Argentina are hot. They want to make amends because they are the big boys. They're one of their favorite teams, but then things are not going according to book.
Mikel and his teammates are determined to break the World Cup jinx when they take on Argentina in Tuesday's Group D finale in St. Petersburg. Brian Idowu gives an insight into the thinking of the team ahead of today's encounter.
Yes, I think that we've met Argentina already a lot of times in the group stages and in the World Cup. And it doesn't add pressure because that was in the past. We are here now to play in the present, and the present is more important right now. Of course, we have to watch the matches and learn from the mistakes we did back then, and we are going to improve on it.
If Argentina beat Nigeria in the final game and Croatia beat Iceland, Argentina will go through. Nigeria can qualify with a draw or win against Argentina if Iceland lose or draw against Croatia. And coach Gerard Rohr:
we were much better than in the first one, so we are improving, and the work now is paying. And I hope that will not be already a penalty against us, because my young players sometimes can make a mistake, and that all the set pieces will be okay defensively, and we will be better offensively.
Some Nigerian journalists who are in St. Petersburg for the epic encounter have been sharing with me their perspectives of Tuesday's game.
It's going to be really difficult for Nigeria. Argentina, like you know, have always been a tough nut to crack for us at the World Cup. So this also is going to be almost the same. But I'm very positive as a Nigerian and as a journalist too that the Super Eagles will do the business against the Alba Celeste. So it's going to be very hard. Lionel Messi and the rest of the guys really want to make up for, you know, not playing too well in the tournament so far.
Also, so for me, from what I saw at the press conference, they have underlined the seriousness with which the team has taken this game.
Others believe Nigeria's destiny is in their hands to make or break.
I think then the onus is on Nigeria and Senegal to continue carrying the African flag, because you have Tunisia basically out of the tournament, Egypt also out of the tournament, Morocco out of the tournament, so... it's all up to Nigeria, and that is Nigeria to really try and lift the African dream alongside Senegal.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in St. Petersburg, Russia. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Tuesday, June the 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, decentralized systems of governments in Africa. In Uganda, it's called decentralization. In Kenya, devolution. In Nigeria and Ethiopia, it's called federalism. The transfer of authority from central to local government on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.